TUC Radio San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Satish Kumar, From Monk to Activist, Part 1. Born in India, Satish Kumar became a Jain monk at the age of 9. Influenced by Gandhi's writings, he left the order and became an activist in the land reform movement. Kumar then took an 8,000-mile journey for nuclear disarmament. He and a friend walked from India through Pakistan, Afghanistan, to Moscow, Paris, and London. From there, they crossed to America. You are about to hear a first-person account of the most moving events in these journeys. Satish Kumar spoke at the California Institute for Integral Studies in San Francisco. Satish Kumar.
By the time I was 9, I met the monks, the teachers and gurus of my mother. And they said that the only way to be free of this cycle of birth and death and birth again and death again, the samsara, is to renounce the world. And so I left home. I left my mother. I left the family. No money, no home, bare feet, in a monk's robe, begging bowl in my hand, going from door to door, begging for my food. And you know what I learned as a monk? Receiving can be even more hard and more difficult than giving. Because when you give, you can feel, yes, I have given, I have sponsored. I have made a contribution, a donation of $1,000 or $10,000. I have given food to the monks. You can feel happy as a sense of achievement. But when you are receiving, you are putting your hands in front of someone and asking, will you share a piece of bread with me? At that time, you are truly egoless, truly defenseless and vulnerable. You have to be practicing trust and faith from the every pore of your body and your spirit and your mind and your thought and your soul. And also, as a monk, walking, because you have no home. My monastic order was without a monastery. It was a walking, wandering order. And so I was walking day after day from village to village. And walking itself becomes a meditation. You feel it. You stand on the earth. Earth holds you. Without the earth, you cannot exist. So that kind of meditation of unity with the earth, that contemplation, that walking meditation, I practiced for 9 years. During this time, journey continued, and I came across Mahatma Gandhi. And that, reading his autobiography, changed my life. You know, there are sometimes you come across a book or a person or a message or a thought which triggers something so deep and profound that it changes your life. And Mahatma Gandhi had that influence on me. Particularly his message that it's no good a few people going in the monastic order and practicing spirituality in their private life as personal, very personal spirituality, personal nonviolence, personal truth, seeking the personal journey. That is a kind of dualism, a kind of fragmentation, a kind of separation. Gandhi said, my mission in life is to bring spirituality, truth, nonviolence in everyday life. Our politics should be nonviolent. That's why he organized a campaign for the independence of India based on nonviolent principles. Our economics should be nonviolent. So he organized a campaign of reconstruction of India and Indian villages based on handicrafts, spinning the spinning wheel, and building local village economy. Our education should be non-violent. Our commerce and business and trade and industry should be non-violent. Spirituality in everyday life. Every activity we engage in has to be informed and transformed. When I read this, that was quite unsettling. Because I was a monk. I was keeping my back towards the world and face towards God. I had nothing to do with the world. I had renounced it. I could not even call my mother as my mother. I would only say she was my mother. So I was practicing such an extreme form of personal spirituality, personal nonviolence. But Gandhi was saying we need to make it social nonviolence, political nonviolence, social spirituality, collective spirituality. So I decided to leave the monastic order. And one night after midnight, I escaped. I ran away. Because once you are a monk in Jain order, you are a monk for life. You are not allowed to leave. But I was feeling so unsettled and so inspired by Gandhi and so drawn by his ideas that I thought I want to take Jain spirituality and Jain principle a step further. And make it not only personal, but personal and social. And so I worked in the Gandhian movement, particularly the land reform movement, because Gandhi's follower Vinoba Bhave was going around India saying that as Mahatma Gandhi showed us the way to make India independent through non-violent means, we should follow the same path to bring economic change, land reform, through non-violent means. And so he was going to the landlords, owning large amounts of lands, and asking them that if you have 5 children, consider me your 6th child and give me 1/6 of your land. 6th child representing the poor, the dispossessed, the landless. And there was a miracle happening in India at that time. The miracle was that the landlords were being persuaded and being changed. Their hearts and minds were being changed. And he collected 4 million acres of land in donations and contributions, which he distributed. And I was party to that. And we distributed that land to the landless, to the untouchables, to the poor. And so during that time, my journey continues. I'm giving you a little bit of sort of a snapshot of my journey. While I was living in the Gandhian ashram, and one of the things I want to tell you, the rule of the Gandhian ashram was that you only need to work for your livelihood for 4 hours a day, no more. I think it will be a very relevant principle for the Americans. No more than 4 hours a day. And I say for the Americans because America is one of the richest country in the world. If you cannot afford to take time, who can? Gandhi said, learn to live within the means you have been able to earn in 4 hours. That's enough. Because the rest of the time you need for your imaginative work, for poetry, for painting, for art, for imagination, for meditation, for community service, for going out and making friendships, taking care of the old and the young and the children. I'm reminded of a story. A Muslim emperor in Persia asked his Sufi master, please give me some good advice. What is the best course of action for me to do? So after a very brief thought, these Sufi masters are very, very wise and very quick. He said to the emperor, "My lord, you must sleep as long as you can." So the emperor said, "What kind of advice is that? Sleep as long as you can? I have ambassadors to receive. I have judgment to give. I have people to receive. I have so much work to do. And you say sleep as long as you can?" So the Sufi master said to the emperor, "My lord, longer you sleep, less you will oppress." I think this was a wonderful advice. I can say from a very profound humility to America, if America sleeps longer, it will oppress less. If we work less, we will be damaging the earth less. More we drive in our car, more we work in our offices and factories, more we manufacture, more we go and shop in the shops, we are damaging the earth. We have reached at a level of production and consumption where our activities are becoming damaging to the soul, individual person, damaging to the communities, and damaging to the earth. So that was my ashram life in Gandhian ashram. And then, one day, as I was reading one morning newspaper, a brief news story attracted my eyes. And I read that a great English philosopher, very famous, 90 years old, Bertrand Russell, he has been put in jail because he was protesting against the nuclear weapons. So that was something really shook me. And I felt, wow, here is a man of 90 going to jail for his convictions and for peace in the world. What am I doing? And so a friend of mine, E.P. Menon, and myself, we both decided that we will join the movement of Bertrand Russell against nuclear weapons. And we'll join in a way which is a bit special. We will make a walk to Moscow, to Paris, to London, to Washington, D.C., these four nuclear capitals, and protest against the bomb. And we wrote a letter to Bertrand Russell, say how inspired we are, and we are doing this, and we hope that he will support us. And Bertrand Russell sent a very nice letter back and said, "I'm delighted that two young men from India, from the country of Gandhi, coming on this journey. But please walk fast, because I'm 90 years old and I want to see you when you come to England." So we did try to walk fast, but it took 18 months. Nevertheless, Bertrand Russell was still alive and he welcomed us and received us. So that was the journey, which I would say journey of the soul, journey of life. And when we decided to go on this journey, our teacher, our guru, our mentor, Vinoba Bhave, the Gandhian leader who was engaged in the land reform movement, he said to us, "Satish, Menon, how much money are you going to take with you? Because it's a long journey. It may take you years. And you have to go through so many countries." We said, "We don't have much money, but we are trying to gather some, raise some funds, and we will have some money with us." Then he said, "But I want to tell you something. I want to give you a piece of advice. Please go without any money in your pockets." I said, what? This is not a small piece of advice. Without any money, sometimes we need to make a telephone call. Sometimes we need to write a postcard. Sometimes we might have to have a cup of tea somewhere. Not a single penny? Not a single cent? Venerable said, not a single cent. You were a monk. You know how to live without money. When you have money, you go and eat in a restaurant. You go and sleep in a motel. But when you have no money, you are forced to find a kind, hospitable person to provide you with hospitality. And that way you go in the homes of people. You see the cultures. You communicate with them about peace and non-violence. And when you have no money, you are totally defenseless. You have to be trusting and you have to have a faith. You are vulnerable, like a monk I spoke about. And that advice was a great advice. And we took it. And we traveled for 2.5 years without any money in our pockets. When we walked from Delhi, from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi, to the border of India and Pakistan, our friends came to say goodbye and bid farewell. And many of our colleagues and friends and family members. And one of them said, Satish, are you crazy? You are going to Pakistan, a Muslim country, an enemy territory. We had 3 wars with Pakistan, between India and Pakistan. And you are going without money, walking. I fear for your life. I think you must take some money. If not money, at least I have brought a few packets of food for you. Take them with you so that by the time you find some friends, people who can support you, you have something to sustain you. I said, I thought for a minute, but I said, my friend, you are very kind. You are most generous. You are most thoughtful. But I cannot take these packets of food. Because these packets of food are not packets of food. They are packets of mistrust. What am I going to say to Pakistanis? That I don't trust you, so I have brought my own food with me from India, all the way. He was in tears. He was very kind. He was worried and frightened. What will happen to us in Pakistan? We said, don't worry, we are in the hands of gods. We walked into Pakistan. You may not believe that miracles happen, but this was quite an amazing and uncanny experience for us. As we put our first steps onto the soil of Pakistan, we meet a young man standing there with garlands of flowers, waiting. And as he sees us, he asks, are you Satish and Menon who are going to Moscow, Paris, London, Washington for peace? Yes, but how did you know that we are coming? Because we know nobody in Pakistan. We have written to nobody. We have communicated with nobody. And here you are on the border, first person we meet is asking us this question. He said, few days ago, as you were walking between Delhi and the border of Pakistan, someone saw you who was coming this way. And he told me in passing that there are 2 Indians going to Moscow, Paris, London, Washington for peace. And I got excited. I thought, ah, I must go and meet them, because I'm for peace. I must meet them. And so I've been coming here, looking for you, in search of you. I came yesterday. I came day before yesterday. And today I was feeling, will I find you? Have I lost you, missed you? And here we are. 5 minutes ago, friends, my colleague on Indian border was telling me that you are going to an enemy territory. 5 minutes later, I'm face to face with this Muslim enemy who is putting garlands of marigold flowers into my neck and saying, I want to support you. I want to welcome you. I want to invite you to my home. I want you to eat with me this dinner, this evening. At that time, I was so moved, I was in tears. I could not believe this invitation. And from that day, I thought that all our ideas that I'm an Indian, you are a Pakistani, I'm a Hindu, you are a Muslim, I'm a black man, you are a white man, I'm a poor man, you are a rich man, all these prejudices are just superficial. Beyond all our external appearances, we share common humanity. And beyond even humanity, we share common life with animals, plants, trees, mountains, rivers, butterflies, worms, that kind of unity in the world. For me, I discovered ecology and spirituality, not from the books. I discovered ecology by walking the earth. And so I went through Pakistan, and through Afghanistan, and through Iran, and reached Moscow. And before I reached Moscow, I tell you one more story of the journey. As I was going by Black Sea, I met two wonderful, very beautiful Russian women. And they were working in the tea factory. So they invited us. So would you come and meet our fellow workers and have a cup of tea with us and tell us about your ideas of disarmament and nuclear weapons and world peace? So I said, all right, we will. Anytime is tea time. And so we went. And we were given cups of teas and bread and biscuits and food and nice welcome. While we were drinking our cup of tea, one of the women had a brainwave. She got up and went out of the room and came back with 4 packets of tea and said to us, these packets are one for our premier in Moscow, second one, the president of France, third one for the prime minister of England or Britain, and fourth one for the president of the United States of America. And I want you to deliver these packets to them with a message from me. And what is the message? My message is that if you ever get a mad thought of pressing the nuclear button, please stop for a moment and have a fresh cup of tea from these packets, so that it will give you a moment's reflection and think that the ordinary women and men in the world who work on farms, in factories, and living ordinary life in the villages around the world have done nothing, nothing to deserve your nuclear attack. That day when this happened, men and I were feeling a bit despondent, a bit disheartened. We were wondering, is it worth doing all this walking, walking through the snow, through deserts, through mountains, through hunger, sometimes not finding shelter, all this trouble, is it worth it? And then we meet these two women. And then we get this peace tea. Our despondency disappeared, evaporated. We felt so inspired. We say, now we have a mission to carry. We have a message to carry. We have these packets of tea to deliver. And so we delivered the first packet of tea in Moscow, in the Kremlin. But when we came to Paris, we faced difficulty. President de Gaulle had nothing to do with nuclear protesters and nuclear movement and peace marchers and walkers. Instead of receiving our tea, he put us in jail. So that was hard. But it was a journey. Up and down is all part of the story. And so we were thrown out of France. But we managed to deliver the peace tea in the 10 Downing Street. And we managed to deliver that packet in the White House. So out of four, three, not too bad. Making peace in the world begins with making peace with yourself. If you are not at peace within yourself, however much you talk about peace in the world, it is not going to happen. Peace does not begin from the White House and 10 Downing Street and the Kremlin and Palace Elysee. It begins from everyone's heart. So making peace with yourself, in my understanding, is the first dimension. And then second, you have to make peace with nature. The way we treat our soil, the way we treat our animals, the way we treat our forests, the way we treat our rivers, it shows as if we are at war against nature. And therefore, making peace with nature and living in harmony with nature, and not with this arrogance that human beings have sort of birthright to conquer nature. So that making peace with nature is the part of the same story as nuclear disarmament. And then we need to make peace in the world between human beings and races and nations and countries. So this is the holistic meaning of peace which I learned during my journey.
That was Satish Kumar, former Jain monk, follower of Mahatma Gandhi's teachings, and author of the book Path Without Destination. He's co-founder of Schumacher College and editor and publisher of the magazine on ecology, Resurgence. Next week, you will hear an interview about his friendship with E.F. Schumacher, the legendary author of the book Small is Beautiful. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program with Satish Kumar for $12. The program includes next week's interview. TUC Radio relies on listener support. Your tape order is welcome. It allows us to continue our work. Our address is TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call anytime toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or go to our website at www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Satish Kumar's talk was recorded by Jennifer Krill and Curtis Overacre. My name is Mariah Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Thank you.